Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Human Challenge, where we explore all the human challenges in today's world, the challenges of being human, and how we can challenge ourselves to be more human for the greater good. I'm your host, Vanessa Furlano, and today we're talking to Nicole White, the founder of Moontime Connections, a flagship project of True North Aid, and the only Indigenous-led period equity organization in Canada. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me, Vanessa.
I'm really excited that you're here. I came across Moontime Connections through an ad on social media, and it was one of those, I think it was one of those ads to bring Moontime Connections into your organization, to highlight some of the work you do, in communities. And I was reading more about it. I was like, oh my God, I need to talk to Nicole. I need to talk to this organization. I think it's fantastic because I know you do a lot of work in remote communities. I come from Sault Ste. Marie, and you know, we're pretty up north in Ontario. And so, you know, being Sault Ste. Marie in the middle of the reserves, you know, there's a lot of our history I felt growing up that was very hidden from me. You know, I always say we have our university used to be a residential school, and it's wild to me that I grew up not knowing that. You know what I mean? That it was like that. That was like when I learned that, I was like, how was this a school basically 10 minutes from my home, and I had no idea that this was a thing, that this was the history of Canada. And so I think it's very important to have discussions like this and to talk a lot about access and barriers that our Indigenous communities have against them. And so really excited to have you here. And I hope that maybe you could start, maybe tell us a little bit more about Moontime, you know, what you guys do, and then also the story of it. And then we'll go from there, because I know you've had some recent press around some data, which I'm really excited to get into.
Mm-hmm. So we started in January 2017. So we've been around for 7 years. And it was an article that talked about young people missing school because they didn't have access to menstrual products. And I am... if you spend any time with me, Vanessa, I want to talk about an issue for a little while, but then I'm like, yeah, but what can we do about it? So what started off as a small little project, I was like, yeah, we're going to send care packages to 5 northern communities, has really evolved into a national organization. So our first product drive, we had over 120,000 products that were sent up to northern and remote communities. And as of December of last year, we just hit over 4 million products. So I'm really, really proud of that. So we do product drives, and then we sort, count, ship, and then all free of charge to northern and remote communities across the country.
Wow. That's amazing. And congratulations for that success to have grown that at large. That's phenomenal. What communities, you know, you say northern communities, and I know it's national. Is there a community or are there communities that are more in need than others? And how do you know that? Do you know what I mean? Is it just based on like demand? And like, how do you engage and interact with all these different communities?
Mm-hmm. So we have really strategically focused on northern and remote. So for me, I'm based in Treaty 6 territory in the traditional homelands of Métis. So Saskatoon, Saskatchewan is my home. But the first community north that we ship to is about 7 hours north of where I am. So it is a northern and remote perspective. And I think the thing that is frequently lost in some of those conversations is that they don't have the social supports that a lot of communities have. You know, in Saskatchewan, there's only one women's shelter in northern Saskatchewan after you get hit a particular place in the province. And really understanding, you know, food banks, there aren't very many food banks in particular provinces and territories. So really, I have a lot of privilege with coming from a small city like Saskatoon, and the fact that I can walk down the street to go to my corner store to get menstrual products if I need it. I can go to my doctor and talk about gyno care if I need to, because they're in the city. But really understanding that when it comes to supporting our northern menstruators, that corner store can be a 4-hour drive away, and depends on ice roads, depends on how often the plane is flying into the community, right? So really, really having a good grasp of this massive country that we live in.
Right. And so I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about this data. I know you just released this press release and talked about the data that you'd collected in these communities. Tell us a little bit more about it, and then we'll probably start breaking it down.
Sure. Yeah. So just a few years ago, Plan International Canada released data for the first time ever, well, at least to my knowledge, around menstrual equity in Canada. And as soon as I read it, I was like, what about the North? What about our Indigenous menstruators? Because that's frequently a demographic that doesn't get focused on. And we really, we automatically took that to a group of researchers. And I'm very thankful that Dr. Karen Lawson at the University of Saskatchewan said, this is a vital question we should be asking, and supported our work with that. So this was the first time ever, first of its kind study offering those much needed insights. We knew that there were gaps in regards to access to period products because of our work. But really having that data, having specific stats to be able to share with policymakers is really going to make a difference for us. So the big stat that really showcased that lack of access was that 74% of Indigenous respondents living in remote communities often or sometimes have issues accessing menstrual products. And that is substantial, considering, you know, 50% of our population bleeds. That is a major issue of access. So even if you do that 4-hour drive, is it even going to be there on the shelves when you get there? Right. So really understanding that this is a substantial issue we've got to navigate.
I really appreciate that statistic a lot. And I think that, I mean, yeah, that's substantial, you know, like you said, 70% of the 50% who need these, that's wild. That's absolutely wild. And so, I guess from a, what are some of the barriers here to this? I mean, you mentioned just the idea of being remote, right? And then there's all these conditions. But what about when we talk about like policy and like the, like systemic, like the systemic effects of this, right? What are other barriers here?
For sure. Well, I think when it comes to Northern communities, I, at least from my perspective as like a Southerner, I always heard about food costs being substantial in nature. So the same thing applies for menstrual products. So something I could spend $5 at my Shoppers Drug Mart is going to cost $15, $20 in Northern and remote communities. I think that that's the other piece to not miss around that is affordability and access. And when we started this work pre-pandemic, costs were different. You know, we've all seen the impacts of inflation in recent years. And if you're living under the poverty line, menstrual products are absolutely considered a luxury. So really, if there's a possibility, if we could create space where that's not something that a family needs to worry about, I really want to make that happen, which is why we're trying to get menstrual products in our schools, in libraries, in those public spaces, anywhere we can meet people where they're at to get people the product they need.
Right. And I think that, yeah, I think that that idea that meeting in public spaces where people already are, especially when we deal with like the barriers of access to care, like there's no other opportunity, right? Like I remember from the data, 37% of your respondents said that products were not available or out of stock completely. 23% have to buy other priority items. So that's speaking to the cost that you were just talking about. And then the 24% are completely unaffordable. So really, I mean, you've got that 23 plus that 24% there. It has to do with cost effectiveness. And so, yeah, I mean, I totally appreciate that, that this idea of the only way to really get people this product is in those public spaces that they're already in. And so I guess that's where you come in. And so I know you mentioned that you take product donations, but you also take cash donations, and then you sort of bring people together in your community. So how many leads do you have overall? Like what's kind of the coverage of Moontime Connections?
Ooh, I'm so happy you asked that, Vanessa. So we currently have 4 chapter leads, including myself. So it started with me in Saskatchewan, then came Ontario, then BC, and then Manitoba. So even though we just have 4 chapter leads, we will send to all provinces and territories. Vanessa, there's a few on the East Coast I haven't been able to hit, and that is my 2024 personal goal. There are 2 provinces I haven't hit, and I just, that's going to happen this year. So we have sent product up to the Arctic Circle. You know, we have sent to very, very remote fly-in only communities. And I'm just so proud to be able to offer that to folks. Whenever we can get a new champion in a community and they're like, whoa, 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 free. And you pay for the shipping. And I'm like, yes. And you can order again if you need to. I'm profoundly thankful for the support of our donors, to the support of our volunteers to continue to support this work and happening every day.
That's amazing. And I like this, like very, yeah, we still have 2 other provinces. I'm like, why are you gonna be quiet about that? Like you gotta, like, that's gotta be loud. You know?
Okay. We'll talk about it offline. Maybe you can help me, because I think a lot of our work and a lot of our challenges is getting folks to understand the importance of it. You know, I work with some First Nation chiefs that are not female identified, who don't think it's necessary to bring into their community. I wow. have some chiefs who are female identified who I have their we text regularly. They're like, I've got space for a pallet, send one up. And I'm like, yes, I'm there. You know, so there's sometimes other things that we're having to navigate when it comes to this conversation. And also recognizing that I am very comfortable talking about menstruation. Not everybody is. So really, anytime we can create space to talk about it, we can destigmatize it. I think the other piece to remember is that pre-colonization, like, menstruation was a rite of passage. Your first menses right. was substantial, and you were taken out of the community and surrounded by your elders, and they take the time to explore what your new role is in the community. And I've heard from elders that people coming back after that ceremony, people are seen with a level of reverence and the level of honor and respect as they've taken this new role in the community and in their families. And I just think everything we talk about when it comes to menstruation has nothing to do with respect or reverence or honoring that journey. And if there's space that we can create to talk about it in an empowering way, to talk about it not in the shadows, not whispered about, I think that is really empowering for all people. I feel like, obviously, the audiences I frequently speak to are female identified, but this is not just a female identified issue. Anytime we can create space for all people of all genders to talk about menstruation, I think that just makes better people, better partners, better brothers, and a better life overall, right? A better community overall. So anytime we can take that space to talk to people about menstruation, I will take it.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And I'm really grateful that you actually brought up this, like, this kind of historical context, this, like, pre-colonization. And it's so true, because, you know, I think to myself how shamed we kind of are, like, you know, the way that temporary and like modern media kind of talks about, like, periods. It's like this gross thing. Yeah. I'm like, why is this gross? This is why I can give birth. You know what I mean? Like, how can we talk about something like this in a way that's like, that's gross. And it's like, like, you're not, and it's like, and yeah, you know, sure, it's painful for a lot of women, but, like, I think it's just because we don't have the right tools, right? Like, we look at who's developed all these feminine products, or these, like, even like these medications for us to take when, if we do have painful periods, men, right? Like, it's like, we don't have the right voices, the right people actually trying to tend to this problem. And it's not that men should be excluded from the conversation, but it's just like, it's not a reality you can relate to. What I mean? Like, we need women to be developing these products and these tools, because we experience it, so we know what it is, you know? And so I'm actually really grateful that you went into that historical context, because that was what was coming up for me. It was like this idea that it's like I love hearing that at some point pre-colonization, you know, our periods, menstruation was actually like this sacred thing, and it was like honored and respected, because I don't think that that's the case anymore. And it makes me sad, because I remember for myself being like, you know, I was probably, I was probably 10, 11 or 12 maybe when I got my first period. And it was like, you know, it was like, oh, this thing you had to kind of like, oh, like, oh, it's okay. And like, you know, like, it's going to be okay. And it was just like, but like, why, you know, why do we treat it like this? You know, why do we talk about it like it's this gross thing, and like, oh, my period's coming. And it's like, but is it like, oh, my period's coming? Or is it like, hey, this is like beautiful. This is the reason that I'm a woman. This is the reason that I'm here. It's the reason that I can give birth. Like it's part of who I am. You know what I mean? And so I appreciate what you're saying here around, one, the historical context, but two, this piece of like honoring and respecting, you know, and then making these spaces for these conversations, right? Because like you said, it actually helps everybody if we had that perspective.
Yeah. Well, and that you can change the narrative in your own community, in your own sphere, right? Like, I love when we start just changing the conversation when it comes to it. And I think it, when I think of my own personal journey around menstruation, I feel like, I don't know what it is, like, leading up to it, there's a different, I have like different energy in regards to how I navigate my personal space. And like, and then when I'm actually like bleeding, I'm much more assertive. I'm much clearer in how I communicate. There's like less BS. And I just like, it's just so refreshing. So I don't, that's just my own personal reflection on my own experience. But yeah, I just like, what does that look like for everybody? And why can't we talk about it? We can talk about it is what I'm trying to say. So yeah, thank you for that.
I mean, I love that reflection. And it's funny, because like, I feel like like over my evolution, right? I'm 29 now, you know? And so for myself, like the more that I kind of evolve and grow as a person and the more that my perspectives evolve on life, the more that I have the similar reflections. And like for myself, like I've actually come to a point where it's like, I don't mind, like I enjoy my period. I'm like, oh, it's that time of the month now. It's this time for me to like rebirth, to shed, like it's that time. And even though, you know, from like a physical symptoms perspective, I can't say that I resonate. That's not my experience, but I do have friends who can have very painful experiences. And you know, yes. But for myself, like, I've really been able to come to the space of being able to honor my experience. And it's like, oh, okay. You know, and like, I understand how my body changes. I understand how my food cravings change and I honor and respect that, you know, like, again, when we think of like popular media, it's like, oh no, you're like, oh, you're PMSing. It's like, no, I'm not. I am being a woman right now. This is what's happening. Like I am being a woman and like my hormone levels are changing. And like you said, like for you, it's like, you're more assertive. And it's like, well, that makes sense because your hormone is changing. Like your hormones are changing. Your body is changing. Like it's adapting. And then it's going back. And like, I think that there is a way to look at menstruation as beautiful. And I genuinely have reached a point where it's like, hey, it's that time. And this is great because it means now it's time for me to like back out of things. It's time for me to take my time for me. It's time for my like a special self-care, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like routine, because it's that time, you know? And so like, you can like honor it and make it sacred. And like, we talk about self-care, self-love all the time. And I'm like, so why aren't we doing this for our like menstruation, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a perfect tie-in. So within the last year, Moontime Sisters, we're just about to pilot Moontime Facilitator Training. So that's where we are putting our Northern ambassadors through like a facilitator training so they can actually have resource kits to talk about menstruation within their community. So talk about it. They're going to be working with their local elders to sort of bring in that cultural component. But then we're also going to give them the full spectrum of products so people can touch the period underwear. They can feel what a menstrual cup is. And there's that space to sort of explore the reusable component in a tangible way that I think might really make a difference in regards to some openness to trying reusable product for the first time, because those things are really, they're quite expensive, and to be able to freely provide them to community, we're really excited to be able to do that. I also recognize that northern remote communities, depending on what their quality of water is like, you know, menstrual cups may not be the best fit. And I don't know about you, but a menstrual cup worked for me for a really long time. And then I had a baby and then it didn't work for me anymore. So, you know, recognizing that what works for you now might not work for you, you know, 5 years from now, and being able to provide that continual support and honoring that everybody's body is different. I want to give people the opportunity to choose what works best for them instead of, that I think goes to how we're upending a charity model as well, because the communities tell us what they want. I never, ever, ever will tell a community what I think they want. Sometimes we'll have good, well-intentioned donors reach out to us and say, and the emails always start with, you know what those girls really need. And it's always cloth pads, menstrual cups. It's always a reusable option. And I get it. I understand. But there are so many limitations to that opportunity. Even, you know, recognizing that clean water is a barrier to a number of communities. And that, you know, I've never had to navigate a boil water advisory to clean a menstrual cup, to sterilize a menstrual cup, right? So really understanding that providing that full spectrum is a part of that conversation, but never, ever assuming that I know what's best for your body.
Absolutely. I love that message so much. I really do. I wanted to ask you, you know, you talked a little bit about how, you know, we're talking about kind of access to care. And then, you know, you're mentioning things like these other barriers, like water access, et cetera. So maybe can you tell us a little bit about what you witness or observe in terms of, you know, when we're talking about access to period care, what other issues do we tend to see that also arise or that are related to that issue? You know what I mean? Because I think that in general, like all of it to me is like systemic, right? Like you can't talk about period inequity without talking about like gender-based violence, especially in remote communities, especially in Indigenous communities, right? You can't talk about that. You can't talk about it without talking about climate change, without talking about like it's all interrelated, right? Without talking about the military complex, without talking about war, like all these things are related. And so are there other issues, you know, when we look at like period inequity, what else tends to kind of accompany that?
You've asked a very big question, Vanessa.
Yes.
So I think I will start with one piece of it. One piece. So even just getting this research going, I think speaks to the relationships and trust building that we've done over the years with our communities. There is a lot of distrust with Indigenous communities of like researchers coming in, exploiting knowledge, and then taking it away and commodifying it and selling it, right? So even just having the trust with our partners through collaboration, relationship building, and support and deep respect is what was a vital piece of the research data gathering that wouldn't have happened had it not been for our years of collaborative community building. And I think I don't want to underestimate that. It sort of underscores the importance of engaging organizations like this for doing this work to direct culturally relevant and sensitive research. It also connects, you know, with the education that we're doing, you know. So the only reason we're doing the education is because we heard from community that this is a gap, that they don't always have access to an elder. They don't always have access to this information. So that's why we've created space. We've worked with doctors to create resources and facilitation materials for our leaders that are going to be doing this work in Northern communities. But it's not me flying up to your community to provide that information, right? It's very important that we're empowering our local folks who are in community, that I know Vanessa from, you know, from grade school, from she was my volleyball teacher, whatever the case may be, right? So those established relationships, even that level of engagement and why we're doing it that way is very strategic and very thoughtful. It doesn't need to come from me. It doesn't need to come from, like, I'm Métis, but I did not grow up on reserve. I did not grow up surrounded by culture. And I think a lot of this work is my own internal reconciliation work and how we're really rooted in the Truth and Reconciliation calls to action, really rooted in honoring UNDRIP and really rooted in some of those recognizing systemic injustices that have occurred and historical injustices that continue to occur. So really meeting our community members where we're at with resources that are tangible, that are meeting the needs of what they're saying they need and pivoting when needed. You know, so an example of one of the things I've had to navigate just recently with some of the research, reporters are like, I'd like to talk to somebody who accesses your product. And I just take a breath and I say that I'm not sure we're going to be able to make that happen. Because I want to honor the fact that there are very few people that want to go on camera and say that I can't afford a tampon or pad, right? So that, like, that it's exploitative to try and find someone who will go on camera and talk about it. So I've just sort of steered clear around the personal narrative. Sometimes we can get them connected to a teacher who disseminates it through the school, but that's not always possible depending on the media countdown. So I think really honoring the fact that how we support our communities needs to be innovative. It needs to meet people where they're at. It needs to take that truly collaborative lens versus a finger wagging, you know, what those girls need. Because the other piece we want to remember is that it's not just girls who menstruate, right? So we are partnering for the first time ever to build resources around Two-Spirit trans and non-binary menstruators. So we're actually working with elders to create educational videos, you know, so that's never existed before. So the idea that we're actually going to be able to create space to support those menstruators, I'm so, so proud of that. So anyways, I'm sorry. I went on a bit of a tangent, Vanessa, and I don't know if I answered your question or not. Clearly, I love my work and I love what we're doing here.
No, it's all good. I mean, I think there was a way that you were alluding to it, that it was like that it has to be all encompassing, right? That when we do talk about this issue, like, we have to make sure that it is all encompassing, because there are many factors here that we cannot know. And so we are leaning on our communities to tell us what these issues are so we can go provide, get the right resources and make sure that they have that access to everything that they need, given the barriers they experience. So there's no other way for us to know that unless we are communicating and engaging authentically and in the right way. And, you know, to your point too, about the point that you said about how a lot of people are very uncomfortable with researchers coming in because of, you know, commoditizing their history, their culture, their experience, you know, that is huge, you know, and I hope that is really heard, like, amongst our listeners, you know, that there is a lot of trauma that our colonization has enforced onto this population of people. And so you know, we do have to really be mindful of that as we engage. And I've seen it myself. You know, we all have the best of intentions, but I've seen many times how, you know, even with good intentions, when we don't take that time to actually listen, to hear, to hold space, we end up accidentally doing more harm than good. You know what I mean? And it's just like, we have to really, really be very mindful of how the conversations that we're having in these spaces and making sure that we're hearing properly, you know, not just listening, but actually hearing.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. So as a reflection, so I remember earlier on, people were like, where are these things going? So I made a map of which communities were getting product. And within 5 minutes of posting that map, I heard from a community who were like, can we get ourselves taken off that map? I don't want to. So even just sort of even publicly identifying that our community is navigating poverty and needs to access products, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I automatically was like, yeah, of course, donors need to know that. That would be helpful. And then, you know, so really recognizing that Moontime Connections isn't always going to get it right either, right? So we are learning as we go, and we really, we've learned a lot in 7 years, and I'm sure we'll continue to stumble, but we will always, always honor community voices first and foremost, and supporting what they need.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I love that. And I thank you for sharing that, because I think, you know, when we have those conversations, that is what allows us to have the space to, you know, make sure that we're learning from each other and like evolving with the communities that we work in. So I think that's, I think that's really beautiful. The last thing I wanted to just touch on real quick before we head off is, you know, you were talking about your own internal reconciliation, which I thought was really beautiful. And I wanted to touch on that because you were also touching on the, you know, how Moontime is aligning with the call to actions in Canada around truth and reconciliation. And so I wondered if you could spend a bit of time, maybe if you're comfortable sharing a bit about this reconciliation journey for yourself, what this has been like for you. And then in some way, maybe, like I said, aligning it to some of the CTAs between Moontime and the Canada Truth and Reconciliation Plan. I'd love to, you know, have some conversation around that.
For sure. Absolutely. So I think I could probably talk about my personal stuff for a long time, so I'll try and briefly and then circle back. So, you know, I am Métis. I have connections back to the Red River Carts in Winnipeg, and really, really proud to have that as my heritage and ancestry as an adult. I definitely grew up in a family that did not speak of Indigenous anything. And my grandpa, who it 100% came from, died 8 years before I was born. So there was just a lot of silence. You might see some cyclical pieces of I don't like to sit anything in silence, Vanessa. So I just experienced the racism growing up. I experienced the racism. I experienced, you know, being told I'm a dirty Indian. And I was like, what does that mean? And I knew from the level of vitriol that was thrown at me, it wasn't a good thing, right? And it wasn't until I was late teens, early 20s that I finally had a family member admit to me that I'm not white. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I've figured that out by now. But even still, it's silence. And really recognizing that so many folks who have missed mixed ancestry may not always have their origin story, may not have that cultural connection. So I feel like I walked in between worlds for a really long time. So when I went back to school to get my social work degree, I actually went back to the First Nations University of Canada specifically because I was like, I'm ready. I want to do this work in a more tangible, meaningful way. And especially if you're going back to work with us for the intention to get a social work degree, like social workers were on the front lines of breaking up Indigenous families for generations, right? Like let's call a spade a spade. Excuse me, I'm not sure if that's a phrase that I'm supposed to use anymore. So let's call the history out as it is. So really understanding that that type of role and that type of learning was really focused on understanding generational harm, generational trauma, and understanding what deep healing can look like for our families, our Indigenous families. And I was so empowered by our elders that I was able to build strong relationships with. And I felt like for the first time in my life, it was truly authentic because it felt like I was sort of like dipping my toes in it, but it didn't feel like it fit for a really long time. And it wasn't until like my heart cracked open and I just embraced the vulnerability and humility in sort of honoring that this is truly who I come from. And even though I wasn't birthed into the culture, I have come back to it in a really full circle, fulsome way And I'm so proud. One of my baby's first set of shoes was a pair of moccasins that I handmade for her. You know, so there's space that we're breaking those cycles of silence, and we're breaking that silence around what culture looks like and how we can incorporate it into our family. And I'm deeply proud that I've been able to weave that into our work within Moontime Connections, that it is authentic, it is meaningful, and absolutely rooted in respect and humility. Our mission and mandate, if you spend any time on our True North Aid website, our mission and mandate is actually in a medicine wheel, right? So we've actually, like, how do we support community in a tangible way that is connected to that cultural piece? So really honoring that and taking the opportunity, if anyone is able to follow us on Instagram or Facebook, if you want to join in our work, we would love to have you. But it also, we take the opportunity to educate our Southern partners, our volunteers. We really want them to have information about why we don't use the term period poverty, right? We talk about menstrual equity. You know, there's the small pieces that I think that if we can just sort of ingrain it in people's DNA in regards to how we think about working with community, how we can walk within our own lives, I think that is doing some really transformative internal work. Thank you, Vanessa. I appreciated that reflection for myself personally. So thank you for that.
Oh, no, thank you for sharing that. I feel that when I hear about like truth and reconciliation, I've started to learn and realize, just, you know, through observation and through discussions, how it is actually, how it truthfully does support everybody, right? Like both individuals in our Indigenous communities, because like I've heard similar stories to yours, right? And then like even myself going through my own, and I'm Mexican Italian. I talked about growing up in Sault Ste. Marie earlier in the beginning, like, you know, being so ignorant to our history, like that was hard for me to like have to hear, you know what I mean? And so I actually, on Truth and Reconciliation Day, my university, they do, or like my local university, I never attended, but like my local university in town, they have a vigil every year. And you know, so it's like, oh, I feel like it's like part of my responsibility as a citizen to show up and to support my community in that way. You know what I mean? And so like, I start to see, like when I show up to these spaces, like I start to see how this reconciliation actually does impact everybody. You know what I mean? And so I think it's like really, really, really beautiful. And that's why I love to hold space for that, because I think that we need the space for these conversations for all of us to heal like individually, but to also heal collectively, right? Because this is trauma, you know, at the end of the day, all of this is like very traumatic for people. And so it's like, how do we put these pieces together, and how do we have these spaces for these conversations and to honor truth and reconciliation for what it is and the truthfulness of it, because I do think that, again, in this like very modern commoditized world, I don't think that the truth of it is really still properly embodied. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think we're still quite superficial with it. And, you know, there are the people that are trying, but it is hard to really break that, because it's consistency, right? And when we don't have this like consistent space for it, when people aren't actively showing up, when we're too busy for it, you know, that's when the problems, or that's why we will slow down our progress, right?
You're totally right. I feel you're right that there's a lot of superficiality when it comes to it. I guess I'm just sort of, I have to honor the steps where they come. And I think one of the main disconnects I see within my own community is that, you know, people understand the historical trauma, but don't understand how it impacts how they see people in the community today. So if you see somebody who's actively navigating homeless, who's unhoused, who may be navigating mental health, who may be navigating addiction, like that is absolutely directly tied to those historical pieces. So it's not just about wearing that orange shirt when you need it, and really understanding that it is all connected in what we do and how we walk through our world and how we walk through our community, and that all of us need to be welcomed into that community.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that's a really great message to close on. So thank you so much for sharing your story, the work that you do, your own reflections. Really grateful for everything. And really best of luck as you continue to expand. Happy to be supportive in whatever way makes sense. Maybe one more time, just a quick shout out. How do we get in touch with you? How do we follow you for those of us who are interested in supporting what you do?
Absolutely. So I would find Moontime Connections on Instagram, and we've got, each chapter has a Facebook group. So we have a Facebook group called Moontime Connections. So come join us there. We'd love to have you. Thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you so much.